Myron, when's the last time you watched a March Madness opening weekend from somewhere other than a press box or press row seat? And where was it?
I mean, it's probably at my house, you know. I mean, we've had a couple runs these last few years where it's easier to cover it from home. You actually miss so much on the road. So I'm actually staying home again. My preference now is actually to be home for the opening weekend and then hit the road the next weekend. So I love it. You don't miss anything from home. You miss a lot when you're on site in those games.
Smart man, young journalist, listen up. Sometimes being at home, it matters. That said, the Madness tips off tomorrow. How you feeling, Playboy?
I'm excited, man. You know, I feel like we say the same thing every year. There's chaos, upset potential. Who knows what's going to happen? But this year really feels that way to me. UConn, obviously, is the team that everybody's chasing. But I don't know if we have a great team. I think we have a lot of very good teams. And then a bunch of pretty good teams behind them. So I think we're going to have a lot of madness in the opening round. And I'm just excited for it to start.
When you were on a couple weeks ago, we talked about how difficult this is to predict. That trend kind of continued during conference championship weekend. A lot of top teams got upset. For those who are unfamiliar with the term bid thief or bid stealer, they are now in terms of their sports lexicon. How did that change things a little bit going into the draw on Sunday?
It dramatically changed everything. It changed the entire field because, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is that the selection committee is working on the field nonstop over the course of the last couple months of the season. So it's not like they get together on Selection Sunday or the night before they put together a bracket. So going into the conference tournaments, for the most part, the bracket is set. Now you have to have some flexibility depending on if there's a bid stealer, but it's pretty concrete. But then to have Oregon and New Mexico and UAB and some of these teams that stole bids, I don't know if we've had a weekend like that where teams that look like they were a lock to get in, teams like Oklahoma and others, suddenly are left out. So it was a dramatic move into Selection Sunday.
This season of men's college basketball has lacked the buzz and attention we're used to seeing. But now that the tournament is here and bracket bets are rolling, that is sure to change. So today, our Myron Metcalf gives us his take on everything we need to know as the first round tips off on Thursday. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Wednesday, March 20th. This is ESPN Daily. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, Myron, let's dive in right here. We'll start in the natural place. UConn, they're the top overall seed. They're the only top seed that actually won their conference tournament, and that happened fairly comfortably. How much do you feel like this team really is that much above the rest of the field?
I do think they're a cut above because I think they've gotten better. I did the ESPN Radio Selection Sunday show. I had the privilege of doing that, and we talked to Tristan Newton, who was the star of that team, projected All-American, and I said seven-game series. Last year's UConn team against this year's UConn team, he said this team would have beaten that team. And he was on that team last year. And I think that just says a lot. Donovan Clingan has certainly improved. I think Dan Hurley has more confidence just after what he was able to achieve. Stephen Castle, a guy, an NBA prospect. And then Newton. I just think they have this core of guys who are really continuing the momentum from last year, even though it's a different team. And when you have some of the dominant performance that UConn has had, it's not just the wins. is that they've been able to beat really good teams by double digits, 15 points, even more in some cases. There's no team going into the field, going into the NCAA tournament with more confidence and bravado than UConn.
You know, we could argue about whether or not UConn's a blue blood. They are. We've been over this. But there's also been this discussion about Dan Hurley over the course of the years where all of a sudden he's not only a legit guy, he's a guy with a ring, and he's a guy that people are looking up at. How much of him do you think matters in terms of their ability to potentially repeat something that hasn't happened in college basketball in 17 years?
Yeah, I mean, people have to understand how obsessive Dan Hurley is with basketball. Like, I've been around Dan Hurley. I've done UConn games, and like, you go around him pregame and the dude just has an energy like he's about to burst, and he can be playing a low major team that no one's ever heard of. Like, that's just how he is, you know? So I think the energy is infectious, and I think he really loves to do this and really love to coach. He's worked his way up. He understands the value of the brand being at a place like UConn. And I think for him, winning the championship and getting a ring after all he's done from the high school to the, you know, college level, I think for him, it was like, yeah, I showed you all what I could do. And he's not satisfied, though, because I think he's taking that energy into this season where he's like, no, I'll show you I can do it again. Right. And I think that to me is the attitude that impacts this UConn team, that probably if you told them that they had to play the Denver Nuggets on Thursday, Dan Hurley would come out and be like, okay, whatever. You know, we got a shot, even if it wasn't real, because he just has that level of confidence in his guys.
The path to the title does not look easy for the Huskies, however. They did get the lowest ranked 2 seed in Iowa State, but Illinois is right there at number 3. Auburn's the number 4. People thought that could have been a 2 seed. Is UConn playing against a stacked deck in this particular region?
I think it's a fair deck, honestly. I mean, I don't think the committee had a bunch of misses in this round. I mean, to me, Houston probably has more complaints as a 1 seed than anybody else. But, you know, an Auburn team that the metrics love Auburn, will the best Auburn show up? I think that's a fair question. You got underdogs like FAU. We know what FAU did a year ago, making it to the Final Four.
Yep.
I don't think they're as good as they were a year ago. Same goes for San Diego State. I think Illinois is a good team. Terrence Shannon's been able to lead that group. You know, they win the Big Ten tournament and certainly were competing for the Big Ten championship. They're good. I don't know if they're UConn good. And I think Iowa State has been good, right? They beat Houston defensively, one of the best teams in America, really balanced. But they don't have that star power and talent that UConn has on its roster. So I think if you're UConn, you go, yeah, there's some tests in this region, but we can beat everybody by double digits the way that we did a year ago.
Moving over to the Midwest, we've got Purdue staying in the Big Ten. They're at the top over there. They went down last year. A number 1 seed lost in the first round, and they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. They still have Zach Edey. He's likely going to be the player of the year winner. We talked about that a little bit a couple weeks ago. But come on. I mean, whatever you want to call it, the monkey on your back, the demons from the previous year, how much does that affect a team when it comes down to, yeah, we're a number 1 seed again, and we really think we've got a shot? How much does the past play into the present?
You know what I love about this team, Clinton? They faced it. Like, they didn't run from it. You know, I had a chance to be around these guys earlier in the season, talk to them about what that experience was like. You know, after they lost that game, they had to take a bus ride back home. And the players told me it was complete silence on the bus the entire trip. And then halfway through the trip, they run into a snowstorm, right? It's like everything that could go wrong for that team had gone wrong. But they digested it. They faced it. They took all the questions. They took all the criticism, all the jokes. And they said, we heard you. We're going to get better. Zach Edey is better. He's lost 10 to 15 pounds. He's a projected lottery pick now. He plays in space the way that he couldn't a year ago. You look at how good this team shoots the ball. Last year, one of the worst three-point shooting teams in America. This year, a top 5 three-point shooting team. So when people are like, is this the same Purdue? It's actually not, if you look at the numbers. But I think the most important thing that they did was they did not hide from their reality. They did not run from what happened last year. And you know who did that also? Virginia, after they lost to a 16th seed, and then the following year they won the national championship, they had the same process. Tony Bennett put chairs in the middle of the gym And he had all of the guys who had lost that game sit in that chair and just talk about how it felt and really go through, you know, sort of the emotions of that. And I think Matt Painter's team has done the same thing in preparing for this tournament.
It's been a long time since a Big Ten team won the men's national title, though. Do you think this team, setting last year aside, has the moxie to make the run that a lot of people think that they can and finally take that title back to West Lafayette?
Yeah, I mean, they got the toughest matchup in America. Now, I don't know if people understand what it is to play against Zach Edey, right? Like, we have this image when you hear 7'4". I think people think the tall, skinny guy, right? Like the guy who's long, but, you know, physically not a whole lot there. This is a sequoia tree. I mean, this is a redwood in Zach Edey. This is 7'4", strong. And when you talk to coaches, like coaches will tell you, there's literally nothing you can do when he decides to get to the basket except foul him. You can foul him, or you're going to get dunked on, or he's going to lay it up. Whatever it is, there's just no way to stop him. So I do think they have the most imposing player in the field. And then you can't cheat on Zach Edey the way that you did last year because of all the three-point shooters. You got a team making over 40% of their threes. Now you can't just double Zach Edey and dare somebody else to beat you because they will beat you. So I think Purdue has it. Certainly, when you consider the advantages they have. And defensively, Edey's a lot better. You can't kind of, you know, pick on him in pick-and-roll situations. He is a better player defensively, and that changes everything.
Moving over to the South region, you mentioned Houston earlier. And, Myron, I got to admit, back when I was in my prime bracket-filling-out days and I cared about this on a level of competition that I've perhaps matured out of now, when I saw Kelvin Sampson teams on the schedule, I was like, oh, they're out of there early. That was always my impression, fairly or not. He's got that Houston program, however, back, kicking behind. They are one of the more high-profile programs and have been under him. They're about as high-profile as that school has ever had a team in a long time under Kelvin Sampson, and they've been knocking at the door. But he's never won one. How good is this Cougars team, and is this the year that perhaps Kelvin Sampson can put a little bit more hardware on his mantle?
I mean, it could be. You know, I mean, they were a game away from being the number one overall seed. And I think there was a lengthy stretch where, you know, the only team where you say they were the best team in America, not named UConn, and it was sort of unanimous, and there was a long stretch of it, was Houston. Defensively, know what they are. Kelvin Sampson, you don't get to play for him unless you're going to commit yourself on the defensive end. But I think where they're different is they've got more scoring options. Eldrick Cryer coming over from Baylor, I think, has really changed his team and given them another option. And when you talk to Kelvin Sampson, he even asked LJ Cryer, like, why do you want to leave Baylor? If that's an elite team, a team that can win a championship, why would you do that? And just the conversation they had convinced Kelvin Sampson that LJ Cryer really wanted to be in Houston. He has been a huge boost for that team, the way he can shoot the ball and everything that he is capable of. And I think that's why Houston is even a more dangerous team. I mean, they ran through the Big 12. And I could see them running through this tournament as well.
Moving over to the West, the last number one seed is North Carolina. I don't want to say Hubert Davis has been overlooked, but he's done quite the job bringing his alma mater back to a level of respectability that for a program like UNC is not easy. But I do want to ask you, who do you think is particularly vulnerable? If you could name a one or two, and we'll even throw a three in there that you think is going to have a tough time making it to the second weekend, who would you pick?
Oh, man, a one, two, or three. That's really interesting. I think they're all really good. All those seeds are potentially special. Marquette, you got to look at first just because Tyler Kolek, the guard, the Big East player of the year, how will he return? He had an oblique injury that's really been a huge dynamic for them, and just the way that, you know, he struggled in the games he was playing. He's been out. So I think his health is going to matter a lot for Marquette and how good they can be. I think among the one seeds, it's Tennessee. I mean, I'm sorry, the one or two seeds is Tennessee, a two seed. Dalton Connect is one of the best scorers I've ever seen. I did for TV, Tennessee, North Carolina. You see him live, and this 6'6" kid who was at a JUCO a couple of years ago, Northern Colorado after that, it is the best player on the floor. I mean, Dalton Connect's going to be the best player on the floor no matter who they face most likely. But they've had games where he scored 40, 30 plus, and it wasn't enough. So I worry that teams are looking at Tennessee and going, okay, Dalton, I'll give you your 30, but these other dudes ain't going to show up on the big stage and beat us, almost daring another team to beat you. I think that, to me, will be the challenge that Tennessee runs into. And then Kentucky, a team that I think can win it all, a team that has the talent to win a national championship, John Calipari's second national championship at Kentucky. At the same time, if you want to look at the trend over the history of college basketball, teams that aren't top 30-ish in offensive efficiency and top 35-ish in defensive efficiency going into the tournament don't make it to the Final Four, and they don't win national championships. So Kentucky has been sub 100 in stretches defensively, and that is a real problem. The talent offensively is there, but their defense can fall apart against anybody.
You mentioned UConn, Blue Bloods, Kentucky. You also mentioned Blue Bloods, which means results matter. For Coach Cal, John Calipari, is there any discussion of the fact that he might be, I don't want to say coaching for his job, but I know that Big Blue Nation is not necessarily pumped about the fact that they don't seem to be contending every year these days.
Yeah, the buyout's still a lot of money. I think the challenge if you're Kentucky is that is a very, very high pressure job. Who comes in behind him? You know, who has the personality to deal with being a head coach at a place like that where the expectation is that you win every year and you bring in the talent to win every year? You know, I think on both sides, maybe there's a little bit of taking each other for granted. Maybe on the Cal side, taking that support for granted because you're not going to get that anywhere else. And maybe on the fan side, taking what Cal has been able to do for granted. But it'll get ugly if they lose it in the first weekend. I mean, it'll get very ugly. I think, you know, this is like the couple where in their separate group chats, they're telling their friends that it's over. You know what I mean? and like, they're not telling each other, right? But like, they're telling their friends, like, you know what? May not work out. You know, I think this is the end. This is the end. And then all of a sudden you see them go to Cancun together. That's what Kentucky and Cal have done over the last couple of years. But this could be the real deal. I don't see him getting fired, right? The money, the contract, it doesn't work like that. Could I see Cal saying, if that situation unfolds and they lose early, could I see Cal saying, you know what, maybe time for me to go? I could see that situation for sure.
This is the kind of analysis we bring Myron on for. Group chat, breakup, chalk talk. Coming up, we're going to look at some more of the under-the-radar storylines coming from March Madness. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Myron, we've seen some interesting thing develop on the coaching front over the past week with some big names that most people recognize. Juwan Howard, Fab Fiver, gone from Michigan after winning 8 games this year. Rick Pitino, very outspoken throughout the course of the season, saying that his players weren't any good and couldn't move laterally. Well, I guess if you can't move laterally, you don't belong in the NCAA tournament, and he wasn't happy about that. But my favorite story, by a mile, is what's happening right here where I am in LA at Long Beach State in the Big West. Please explain to America what is going on with that program in that situation.
Well, I've known Dan Munson, the head coach of Long Beach State, for almost 20 years. And what happened is his athletic director told him before their conference tournament in the Big West that that was it. You know, and they're calling it mutual, but it was more like Dan said, all right, you know, if you think it's time for a new voice, I'll say it's time for a new voice. and kind of move on. But he wanted the opportunity to coach. He was grateful for that opportunity to coach in the conference tournament. And then he won the conference tournament and led this team to their first NCAA tournament appearance in more than a decade. So now you have a guy who has been fired, who is now in the NCAA tournament. And it is, if you're the Long Beach State athletic department, the most awkward thing that has ever happened. If you're Dan Munchin, it's the most fun.
It's been an awesome week. I mean, it really has. And people are like, you got fired and it's an awesome week. And last Monday was one of the toughest days I've ever had, but it was one of the more rewarding ones. And Monday, when I went in and told them that, you know, this would be my last week, the emotions in that room told me everything I needed to know. And it was worth it all. You know, these kids that I love so much, I knew loved me back.
I was actually doing a TV assignment when all this was going down. After he won the championship, I texted Dan, hey, give me a call. It's like midnight. I'm getting ready to go to bed. I get a call from Dan Munchin, and he's just calling it surreal. And he's just talking about how, you know, he told his team, he told me this, you know, going into the tournament, he said, get ready for a party on Saturday and going into Sunday. And they're like, well, what do you mean? Well, we're going to have a Selection Sunday party at my house, right? Like, so that's how he was talking after he'd been fired and as the tournament is getting ready to happen. So it is just sort of a bizarre set of events. He is ready to move on. He certainly put himself in a situation to get hired at another place, but what a weird situation to be in.
There are no group chat equivalents to that, but I will ask you, can you think of any circumstance like this that's played out in men's college basketball or women's for that matter in the last, I don't know, 10 years?
I can't. I mean, there's certainly been situations where you knew a guy was on the hot seat. There were rumblings that maybe someone had already been hired to take over, but I've never seen a school put out a statement saying this guy isn't our coach anymore, but he's going to coach in the conference tournament, and then he wins the NCAA tournament. I do have a relationship analogy for Clinton. I think I do. It's like breaking up with someone, right? But they're a plus one at your best friend's wedding.
Oh.
So you go to the wedding. You go to the wedding, right? You're going to the wedding. Hey, you know what?
Well played.
Going to the wedding, right? But then things are a little awkward. And I feel like Dan Munchin is in that situation where he just wanted to keep coaching his guys. That's what he talked about. He said he just wanted to be able to coach in the conference tournament and kind of reach that agreement with them. Hey, let me just go out that way. But I think the school assumed they wouldn't be in this situation. They'd be in a situation where he loses early. Everybody goes home and no one cares. Now they're in the NCAA tournament. And I tell you what, they will have more fans from around the country than maybe any team in America because everyone's falling in love with that team.
The backstory there is Arizona once lost as a number two seed in the very building they're playing in to a different school from California. That was Santa Clara. That was many years ago. But two seeds very rarely lose. Something like 93% of two seeds win in the first round. Does Long Beach State have any chance against an Arizona squad that a lot of people think probably have a Final Four run in them?
You know, Fairleigh Dickinson, UMBC, that's taught me that everybody has a chance, right? I don't think they beat Arizona. I think Arizona probably wins by a lot at the same time. Who would ever think that Long Beach State would be here? I will tell you this. Arizona's going to feel weird to hear everybody cheering against them in that building. Now, Arizona fans will cheer for them, clearly, and there's going to be a bunch of them. But everybody else in that building will be cheering for Long Beach State. So it's going to sound at points like Arizona's on the road in a weird way because I think Long Beach State is going to have a lot of supporters because of Dan Munchin's story going viral.
Long Beach State might not have a ton of chance against Arizona, but what are some of the other potential Cinderella stories that you could see developing? We remember St. Peter's from a couple years ago, and they are back in the tournament. Could we have a secondary Cinderella situation on top of all the glory coming out of Long Beach State?
Well, I think this will be one of those situations where you might feel old as a college basketball fan. If you look at New Mexico, there's a Pitino coaching a Mashburn. Richard Pitino, the son of Rick Pitino, is coaching Jamal Mashburn Jr., the son of Jamal Mashburn. So people may see that and go, wow, Jameer Nelson Jr. is at TCU. So there are going to be some familiar names that are probably going to make people feel old. In terms of upset specials, a lot of people are looking at Kansas, Samford, and I understand Kansas has some health issues. Hunter Dickinson, dislocated shoulder. He's practicing again. No one knows how healthy he'll be. Kevin McCullough Jr. on his way to being an All-American, but he's had a bone bruise in his knee that's really changed his season. If they're a little off, you have a Samford team. Get this. This ain't no typo. Write it down. 8 players who have made at least 38% of their three-point attempts this season. 8 guys on that team can shoot the rock, Clinton. And I think that's going to be one of those upset specials that a lot of people are watching. And then probably my big sleeper that I would pay attention to in that same region in the Midwest is McNeese State. Will Wade, obviously, has a history with everything that happened at LSU. Kind of went out just before everything that he was accused of doing became legal. But they've won 30 games at McNeese State. And that is a dangerous team that's going to play Gonzaga, upset special. And then maybe they get a shot at Kansas or even Samford. So there are certainly second weekend possibilities attached to that McNeese State team.
Well, I know you've got a little play-by-play stuff under your belt this week, and I know you're a busy man, but I'm looking forward to you joining us as March rolls on. Appreciate you, Myron.
Thanks for having me.
Let the madness begin. I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.